Welcome back to the Dichotomy Diaries. I'm your host, Amanda Arnier. And this week, we are going to do something different. And when I say different, I mean it in every sense of the word. Currently, I am at the Fairmont Millennium Park in Chicago, the 34th floor, and I'm here for a work conference. I just self-tanned, and I'm wearing a robe, and I have my hair in a towel. And I'm like laying in bed Alex Earl style, and I kind of fucking love it. It's great. But I did a survey, I don't know, I think it was like 2 weeks ago, and I was just asking you guys your feedback on the Kyle episode, what you thought, and kind of what you wanted to hear, like, moving forward. We are in the recording process of all the other guests, so that is very exciting. You're gonna have a lot of really, really deep, shocking episodes that are coming up. So I wanted to break it up with kind of just a little bit of an update. So really no intro here, but what we're gonna do is we're gonna go back to the beginning of March, because some crazy shit happened. If you guys follow me on social media, specifically Instagram and Facebook, you probably saw something alluding to this, but if you don't, let me let you in on it. So, it's middle of the week. It's the 6th of March. I'm working. My mom's working. The dogs are resting peacefully in my house in Huntley. And the doorbell rings. I'm like, okay, delivery. We have three women that live in the house that just love Amazon. So I'm like, okay. And I look downstairs over the banister, and I could see through the window by the door that there's two police officers. And I'm like, what the fuck? Okay. I'm immediately thinking that my dogs got out. So I'm like looking for them, running down the stairs. And I come out and I'm like, hi, can I help you? And they're like, yeah, are you Miss Arnier? Yes. Oh, so your husband, oh, well, I mean, your ex-husband, he's here, and he's here to retrieve his belongings. And I'm like, huh? My ex-husband who lives in Colorado is here in Huntley, Illinois, without any warning? And they're like, yeah, so because it's a civil matter, we can't tell you that you have to give him those things, but like, we're just here to keep the peace. And I'm like, this motherfucker really went to the Huntley police station and was like, come with me, because she's gonna start problems. I'm like, oh my god. So I'm like, it's a work day, he can't just show up here without notice. Like does he have a truck? Like, I have a bed upstairs that I have to break down because, you know, he's coming to take the bed away that I sleep on every night. And they're like, well, he has a truck and he has someone here to help him. And I'm immediately thinking, like, who could he have with him? There's no way he brought his girlfriend, right? So I'm like, yeah, tell him that I'll email him. He's going to have to come back after the workday. Mind you guys, I'm full-blown panic attacking in this moment, and it's not very easy for me to, like, articulate my thoughts out to these police officers. I probably sounded crazy, but they're like, yeah, we're just here to keep the peace. And I'm like, well, you know what? Actually, thank you so much for being here. I feel so much more safe because, like, he's a violent felon, so thank you for being here. Totally sarcastic and passive aggressive, and I just walked inside. So I'm like breathing, and I'm like, okay, holy fuck. All of his stuff is like in boxes, in like the attic part of the garage. the bed, like, I just had changed my sheets, like, okay. So I, like, call upstairs, and I'm like, Ma. She, like, peeks over. I'm like, Dick is in the driveway. And she's like, huh? And I'm like, he's here with the police to get his stuff. So she, like, rushes down the stairs, goes out the garage, goes into the driveway where I guess he was standing. And I really, like, I wanted to go out there. But again, when I'm, like, in his presence, I feel uneasy. So I was already, like, full-blown panic attacking. I'm like, I won't go out there. But I wanted to hear what was going on. So I went out in the garage, and I was kind of, like, standing to where, like, they couldn't see me. But I see my mom talking to him, and he's, like, at the edge of the driveway. And I look, like, kind of beyond him, and there's, like, a pickup truck that I've never seen before. And standing right next to the pickup truck is this, I don't know what to call him, because he's not, like, a client because he doesn't pay because he's low income. But he lives in Illinois, and this is the guy that picked him up from my father's, that picked Dick up from my father's house twice and drove him to the airport to escape. This is a guy that has stolen money from Dick when Dick was using him to, like, help him post his content before I came along. This person is, like, he's scary. He's, like, I don't know. He's, like, internet troll, sleuthy, basement dweller, scary. So I'm like, wow, now he knows literally my address. That's fucking crazy. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is wild. So I go back inside, and finally, my mom comes back inside. And I was like, okay, so what happened? And she's like, he's going to come back at 6:30. I told him that we'll break down the bed and we'll put all of his stuff in bags. And yeah. And I'm like, and that's it. That was the conversation. And she's like, well, he asked if it would be appropriate if he could hug me. And I'm like, you fucking got to be kidding me. She's like, and I said no. And then he kind of, like, laughed and, like, half-assed hugged me anyways. And I'm like, this guy just is unrelentless. This is crazy. So I think that I laid down for probably, like, an hour on the floor with my dog, and I took a nap to kind of, like, come to. I had to take the rest of the day off work because I was so derailed. And now I have to break down this bed, sleep number. It takes a fucking long time. It's very heavy. And get all these clothes together that are in 700 different places in my home. Okay, fine. So me, my mom, and my granny start getting all of that together, putting stuff in garbage bags, whatever. And my dad's going to come over around 6:30 because he's like, I'm going to be there. I'm like, that's nice of you, Dad. Like, he's very protective and he loves me, and I appreciate him being there and looking out for me and my mom. So I think that I got an email in between the time he was there talking to my mother and 6:30. And the email was from Dick, and it said, I'll be back at 6:30. You can text me. Here's my new number. And he sent me his phone number. I had already had it because hashtag internet researcher. And, like, I didn't get messages from him. And I'm like, okay, well, I look, and I had him blocked, which is weird because I haven't had him blocked, but then I did because he was, like, trying to call me. And I'm like, I can't deal with this. So I blocked him, and apparently he had, like, tried to let me know he was coming. Okay. Could have still emailed. Anyways, so I don't want to communicate with him. So I'm just having my mom do it. And my mom is like, okay, he's going to be here in, like, 10 minutes. I'm like, all right. So he shows up, and he backs this pickup truck into the driveway. I have everything ready for him in the garage. My dad's just kind of, like, standing there with his arms crossed. My mom is kind of, like, pointing to him, like, this is this, this is this. And I'm just there, like watching it all happen, but I have like some like personal affects that are like sentimental, and like family stuff in my hand that I have to give to him. So he starts like taking all these bags and parts of the bed and putting them in this pickup truck, and there's no one with him to help him, so it's just him. And the bed is like pretty heavy, and he's like picking up the heavy pieces by himself. My dad's just standing there with his arms crossed, just like stoic, like, I'm not helping that motherfucker. And I think at some point my mom started like picking up some of the bags and like helping him put stuff in the truck. And I think maybe I grabbed one, like when I was on my way to go and like give him this box of, I think there was like paperwork and his mother's a ring she gave me and stuff like that. So he loads everything up. And like, also, you guys, he's like smiling and like, I don't know, like it's like this energy, like there nothing bad has happened. This is just a regular occurrence for him. He's kind of talking back and forth with my mom. He kept like coming around like to where I was standing, and it made me uncomfortable. And I didn't know what to say because I'm kind of at a loss for words. And so he gets everything loaded up in the truck, and my mom was like, "Dick, come over here. I need to talk to you. We have business." And then she looks at me and she's like, "You too, come over here." And I'm thinking, like, she's gonna make me apologize. She's gonna make him apologize. Like, I don't know what's gonna go on, but I'm like, okay. And she's like, "Dick, you owe me $2,500 for helping you and Amanda pay, XYZ bill. Do you recall saying you would pay me back?" He's like, "Yes." She's like, "Okay. When can you pay me back? I don't care what court says. This is between you and I, and you shook my hand. So you," and he's like, "I can do that. I can do that." So he says that the following Monday he's going to send half. And then the Monday after that, he's going to send another half. Meanwhile, I'm standing there and I'm like, okay, like, why am I over here? And I give him this box of his stuff and I said, "Here, this is this, this, and this." I said, "You realize that you're taking the only piece of furniture that we have left, and it's the bed that I sleep in every night. So essentially, my bedroom upstairs has no bed. Are you like, you're cool with me and the dog sleeping on the floor?" And he's like, "Well, you can buy a bed on Amazon for like $300." And I go, "I don't have $300." And I'm like, "So why don't you buy me a bed?" Like, and he's like, "Well, we can't have you sleeping on the floor." And I'm like, first of all, when he says "we" in any scenario in the present day, I'm like, I cringe. Like, don't say "we" now, okay? Like, "we" has sailed. There was never a "we." There will never be a "we." Shut the fuck up. "Yeah, I'll get you a bed or I'll send you money for a bed." Okay. So he says thank you and says bye, drives away. Okay. So the following Monday, no money shows up in my mom's account. So I'm like, "Why don't you send him a Zelle request? Maybe he forgot." She sends it. Still nothing. I have to leave to go to Las Vegas for an annual conference for work on the 14th. Like, I don't understand why my life is taking me to Vegas so much. I have never liked it, even before him. I don't want to be there. And now I have to be there in a work capacity. Like, we're staying in a casino. It was just like not my vibe. But really cool thing that happened was that I walked in with one of my coworkers, and there like was a worker there, and I got upgraded to a suite, and it was like a little bit of extra money, but like not that much. And it was like a full-blown presidential suite overlooking the strip. And I'm like, okay, silver lining, silver lining. So I got to hang out with my best friend, Marissa, and that was very cool. And it was the conference overall was a good experience, and just being around a lot of the people that I had trained with initially, you know, national company. We won our division in basketball, so that was very cool. And we got to go to the games, and that was neat also. So I just can't get over this, like, overwhelming feeling, though, when I'm in Las Vegas, that I feel actually bad for doing things that other people would normally do when they're in Vegas. So, like, you're walking through a casino, you're walking through your hotel, you see a slot machine, you're like, oh, I want to play. That feeling in my gut of, oh, I really want to play a slot machine right now, feels horrible. Like, I feel like I can't gamble. Like, I feel like I can't enjoy Las Vegas without this, like, shame and remorse. Like, he, like, ruined that for me. Because I do actually enjoy it, but I feel like there's this slippery slope where I'm like, I can't talk about him being a crazy degenerate gambler and then be like, hey, yo, I threw 10 on a three-teamer and played slots until 2 o'clock in the morning. Like, I can't, you know? But then I'm like, I'm not the one with the problem. So I need to recognize that, and I need to be better about, like, living in the moment, having fun, and not constantly thinking about what this means in relationship to my failed abusive marriage. Like, I'm just here with work, having fun with friends. That's it. Present. Stay present. I have a hard time with that. So after being in Vegas for 3 days, per basically everyone, like, it's been enough. And so fly home, got in so super late, and that was Sunday, and I think that I worked the next day. Yeah, I did, but it was just kind of like an at-home admin day and just kind of like catching up. The following day, I had an event that I had to go to at an assisted living home, actually one that my grandpa lives in, and I was doing like a nurse's appreciation. And so I'm there and I'm like feeding the nurses and we're just like all chit-chatting and I'm talking with one of my students and things like that. And everybody's done. And so they kind of clear out of the room. I'm just sitting there and I'm like, is he gonna send money for a bed? Like, is he gonna send my mom money? I'm like, she sent him a Zelle request. I'm like, I'm gonna send him a Zelle request for like $500 and be like, I need a bed. That's it. Like, I don't have to talk to him. Nothing. Okay. So I send a Zelle request for $500 and in the little note, it just says money for bed. Almost like immediately after I did that, my phone is ringing. And it's not just ringing with a phone call. It's ringing with a FaceTime. And I don't know if it was me just having gone through the Las Vegas experience again, me being alone in a place I felt pretty comfortable in, or maybe just where I'm at on my path of healing, but I felt comfortable answering the phone. So I answer the FaceTime, and there's Dick driving in his vehicle. And I'm like, why are you FaceTiming me? And he's like, I'm confused at the Zelle request. I mean, I'm not really sure how three words could be confused, but you said that you would either buy me a bed or send me money for a bed. That didn't happen. Oh, by the way, also, you didn't pay my mom back the money that you said you would. And he's like, well, that's because I didn't get all of my stuff back. And I go, listen, you left all of your stuff. A lot of our shit is gone and I don't know where it is, but I gave you back everything you asked for that I could find. Okay. Like, can you just do something that you say? Like, that would be great. So I don't really know how to explain how this next part went, but he started to talk to me with a smile on his face. Again, like nothing bad had happened and like we were friends. And I was like actually kind of amazed that it was happening. I was trying my best not to engage, but he was saying things. And he actually asked me a question. He goes, how did you see my bank account? And I'm like, you're an idiot. You linked them to the business bank account. I've seen it the whole time. Oh, well, then did you see what happened in December? And I go, no, Dick. Like, I mean, maybe, I don't know what, like, you withdrew crypto, okay? Like, and he's like, yeah, Amanda, I, like, hit it big. And I'm just rolling my fucking eyes. And I'm like, are you serious right now? He's literally gloating about gambling and winning. And I go, that's great, Dick. I'm sure you didn't cash out. Okay. And he goes, no, I did. Aren't you proud of me? And I'm like, anyways, so why are you telling me this? And he's like, well, it was just crazy. And like, you're the only person who really gets it. And he's just going on and on and on about the process of which he won $190,000 and that it's staked in crypto.com now. And he's like, you're the only person that would understand. So now he's like trying to manipulate me. And I recognize this. And I'm like, I don't really care. I said, you have a problem. And let's not forget, you ruined my life. Does that like miss, like, are you missing that? Like, I don't want to talk to you. You have lost your privileges to communicate with me on this level long ago. So like, I can't. So the first thing that he says, he goes, listen, Amanda, you're the most resilient person that I know. You're going to get through this. Everything is going to be okay. I have faith in you. I feel like my head probably spun, but like, what are you guys thinking? Because I know what I thought. I thought, I was like, I'm going to get through this like disaster that you put me in. Oh my gosh, thank you so much for believing in me. That's what I was thinking. And it was a surreal moment because as I'm on the phone with him and he's looking at me and I'm looking at him, I don't feel anything. I feel inconvenienced. I'm trying to like think of everything that I felt. I felt inconvenienced. I actually felt bad. I felt kind of guilty. And I felt kind of guilty because I think maybe of the podcast, really. I felt like I can't trust this person as far as I can throw him. So like, what happens if he goes around and tells everybody, oh, I FaceTimed with Amanda and she was cordial with me? Like, how would that be perceived to all of my listeners? And like, then I was like, why am I feeling all of these feelings? I don't need to feel any type of way about this situation because this is my life. And I promised you guys that I would be extremely, extremely transparent with everything that happened. So that's why I'm telling you guys this, is because this conversation probably went on for 45 minutes and majority of the conversation was him talking and occasionally me being like, fuck you, I hate you, you ruined my life. How could, like, I got to say a lot of the things that I've been wanting to say directly to him, but I haven't had the balls to do it. And now I have the balls to do it, and it felt good. And I didn't feel like there was anything happening to me psychologically as far as manipulation was going. Because, again, I can tell what he's doing. I can tell when he's asking me, hey, did you see the Novak Djokovic-Jannik Sinner match? Oh my God, wasn't that amazing? That he's saying it because he knows Jannik is my favorite player and Djokovic is his. And he's telling me about tennis and how he learned all this new stuff. And I could really teach you stuff because, you know, tennis is kind of our thing, Amanda. Again, you don't have the privilege to use the word our. I'm not really sure how the conversation ended. I think that I was just a little bit uncomfortable after speaking to him, looking at his face for so long and him thinking like everything was okay, talking about sports. And I'm just like, this is wild. This person is mental. Then I was like, I gotta go. Okay. I think that he said something along the lines of, like, I'll send you money. Like, just look for, you know, this thing that I'm missing. Okay. The next day, I get a text message. And it's from him. Hi, Amanda Lynette. And I'm like, what the fuck is this guy doing? Don't call me by my first and middle name. I don't know. I guess I really just don't get what the goal was. And my responses were very, like, platonic and what's up? How can I help you? But if you're wondering why I didn't block him right there, I ran this by my mother, and I actually now have ran it by my therapist. And because I don't feel vulnerable to him in that way, my goal was, I just wanted to make sure that I could get money for my bed. Having this door open to me really was only a benefit to me. That's how I saw it. I guess I do, if I think very deeply on it, I do recognize how actually comfortable it is to communicate with him. And that was a little bit scary for me, because I think everybody else would be like, fuck that guy, I'm gonna fucking punch him in the face, like, scream slurs at him, whatever. But I think I just recognize how delulu he really is in thinking that he can have any type of relationship with me after all the turmoil that he's put me and my support and my family through. So, yeah, it was just interesting. I mean, I think that he was talking a little bit about recognizing the mental state and the mental status that he was in while we were together, and how he made bad decisions and bad choices that he has to live with now. And I'm like, okay, like, yeah, you did. There was no part of me that was like, oh, is he saying that he, like, no, absolutely not. And I think even, like, this is interesting too. It's like, at some point on the call the day prior, the FaceTime, he was like in his home in Colorado, which I understood to be his home with his girlfriend. And he was like, yeah, like, I'm leaving here. There's nothing here for me. Okay, great, dick. Don't care. And then the next time that he sent me a message, he was in Las Vegas. So if history serves, I would venture to say that there has been some sort of abandonment in that whirlwind romance that took him to Denver. But yeah, I needed to tell you guys that, because I've been feeling really guilty about it. I've been feeling really guilty that there is an open line of communication. He did send me money, and I don't know if I'm thankful, or I don't really feel anything about it other than, like, oh, good. And I think that that's really hard to, like, articulate how this feels, because I never wanted to talk to him ever again. I don't have any more grace for him, for what he's done to me, to others, and my family. But getting $433, which, again, is a manipulation tactic, you know, the 33 is my thing. He was only supposed to send 400. You know, is having money feels good, and not being just dead ass broke. So I'm thankful for that. Not thankful to him for doing it, but yeah, I needed to just, like, get that off of my conscience, because I don't know. I'm not really sure why, and maybe some of you guys can relate. I really, truly didn't think that there was ever going to be a time after creating this podcast, like I've mentioned so many times in all of the episodes, that he would ever, ever
want, let alone try to communicate with me on a cordial level. So I was wrong about that too. Yeah. So on the 23rd, the day after, it was my mom's birthday on the 22nd, the 23rd, I actually went with my mom to the Titanic exhibit in Skokie. And I've always wanted to go to one of these. Titanic is my favorite movie. And it was, she got me like platinum VIP passes. I had no idea like what to expect. But I was just geeked about it. And so you walk in and they give you like a ticket with a real passenger name. And then at the end you find out like, did I live or did I die? It's kind of morbid, but it's kind of cool too, because yeah, it's just one of those things. So you kind of go through the whole exhibit and, you know, I think we all know Titanic cinematically, but there's a lot of things that are factual that we don't really know. And it was really cool to like see a lot of like the artifacts from the sister ships. Obviously, there's not that many things that were salvaged from the actual ship, given the fact that it's like 100 Empire State Buildings below like sea level, which if you've ever seen a diagram of is fucking terrifying. The ocean, you guys, is scary. But also, like, why did Titanic have to sink like right there? Why couldn't it have been like a little bit higher up? So maybe we could have like, I don't know, had some cool relics or something. Anyways, it was very cool to see like how many like families and like small children were there and knew like so much about the ship. It's the most famous ship in history. So I really, really enjoyed it. I geeked out. I got a lot of pictures. There was kind of, they had the staircase, like meet me at the clock. They had the bow of the ship. Is it the bow or the stern? I think it's the bow, the front. I have no idea. Where you kind of like stand and, you know, had I had a person with me that wasn't my mother, maybe I would have done like the Jack and Rose thing, but it was just me. And I think I look cute, put on Instagram. As we got to the end of the exhibit, they have like an area where you're kind of like watching the videos of them going down and looking at the wreckage. A lot of the content, the film was used in the actual movie. And then they have like the costumes and the script, the manuscript was there. Oh my gosh, I just wanted to like flip through it, but it was under glass. So get to the end and they have like all of these names on the wall. And I'm looking and I'm looking. And my ticket was actually like, I thought that I had it with me still, but it was, I was a first class passenger, and I think it was like in my 30s, I think it was like 32 or something like that. And I looked and my person made it, they survived. And I felt like kind of this like wave wash over me, for fucking lack of better term, oh my gosh, where I was like, wow, I did survive. And like in the background of the exhibit, Nearer My God to Thee, like what they play on the violin as the ship's going down is playing. It was just a little bit of like, it was a moment for me. And, you know, just thinking about like the symbolism between the fact that my passenger survived and now I'm here doing something that was a bucket list thing. I'm with my mother. Like I too did survive. So I wanted to share that with you guys. I know you're probably like, what the fuck does this have to do with the Dichotomy Diaries? Nothing. So if you want to leave a bad review, be my guest. But I'm keeping you guys updated. So it brings me to today. Today's the 26th. Yesterday, the 25th, was actually like Dante Day, which I fucking totally missed. And I feel like a horrible, horrible person for. But today's the 26th, and I'm currently in a robe, in my bed, super comfortable, at the Fairmont in Chicago. And I probably sat in this room for like a good 3 hours, just like racking my brain about what I should do for this episode. And I'm going back and forth between, do I talk about how I communicated with him? I feel like I'm letting them down. Like, all of these things. What topic? Should I talk about topics? Should I answer questions? No, it's too late to ask questions. It's a lot of things that I was just going back and forth in my head about. And I did it for 3 hours. And I'm like, you're so stupid. Everything that you're thinking about right now, you should just be talking about. So that's when I picked up the mic and I just like put my feet up. And this is where you have me now. That being said, there's like some other stuff that's going on with me that is difficult to navigate on a day to day. So I'm having trouble finding like purpose in my job and in my career. And that's a struggle because I've always had direction in that area of my life and always felt extremely, extremely secure. And for the first time, I find myself not enjoying my work. Even though the mission is great and I know that I'm doing good, I don't know, I need more and I need to use my brain more. And I'm just not, I feel like I'm not applying myself in the right way. So I've been really doing a lot of like soul searching, maybe, I don't know, like looking inward to be like, what do I need to do that is going to fulfill me and just give me a little bit more of a purpose in my day to day? And I feel like project management is the direction that I want to go. I feel like I need to do more with process. I feel like I need to do more with planning and be more behind the scenes than people facing. Not that I don't love people. I do. I love you guys. But my social batteries run out so fast. And when I am mentally and emotionally exhausted, I like cannot get shit done. So being behind the scenes and actually like helping the people, the salespeople, do their job the best way, I feel like this is something that I could be very good at. And just taking all of my education and my experience, like I'm just like, we need to find something that looks like that. In the meantime, I will continue helping people on their quest for higher education and finding their own purpose, and podcasting. But should anybody like know of any like open roles that through knowing me and getting to know me through the podcast you think I'd be a good fit for, definitely let me know and reach out, because there's a lot of open roles, but there's also a lot of people that are looking for jobs. So I always like to have kind of those like one-on-one contacts. I'm going to leave you with one last thing. This is a short episode this week. You guys are in for a lot. Like me and the girls are going to unload a lot on you in these next upcoming episodes. So this one is short and sweet. But do you guys remember quite a few people having reactions to the Dichotomy Diaries? And their reactions were something along the lines of, holy shit, this could be a movie. Or, holy shit, this could be a documentary. Remember that? Did you ever think that? I know I did. And I feel like I manifested it. And you guys, just sit tight. That's all I'm gonna say. Just sit tight. Big things are happening behind the scenes. The Dichotomy Diaries was featured on the US Apple Podcast True Crime Top 200 and on Apple Podcast homepage in the featured section under Who Did I Marry with a bunch of other amazing podcasts. Things are trending upward, you guys, and I know that I have you to thank, but also the story. This story is crazy. It's mine. It's real. It's raw. It's dumb, it's witty, it's all the things. As we move into the next chapter of the Dichotomy Diaries, you're going to be hearing from other victims. And I just have one small ask. Please, show them the grace that most of you have shown me. Listen to their stories and take it all in. See their capacity for love and resilience. And also at the same time, acknowledge similarities potentially in your relationship. Use not only mine, but our stories to validate your own experiences. This is the Dichotomy Diaries. I'm your host, Amanda Arnier. And I'm excited for next week, you guys. See you then.